everybody, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. I am returning here today once again with Dakota Bailey, and we're going to talk about her becoming an Egyptologist.
That sounded really cool.
Well, I mean, just Egyptologist in general, it just sounds really cool. I mean, every single person, I'm like, oh yeah, I have this new friend. She's an Egyptologist. Everyone's immediately like, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Tell me more about this. Please, Dakota, tell me more about, I guess let's start with, What drove you into Egyptology?
Well, I should have realized a whole lot sooner that I was a super weirdo. My grandmother on my mom's side lived with us when I was a kid, and she was obsessed with ancient Egypt. And so I grew up with the bust of Nefertiti on my mantle and King Tut's throne chairs as bookends and paperweights that are these beautiful pyramids with hieroglyphs on the sides of them. And I didn't realize that that wasn't just normal decor for everyone. And so I think it just was kind of like deeply ingrained in me as a kid. And I'm very much like my grandmother. I think we lived in the same room for a little bit when I was teeny tiny, and maybe just hanging out with her a little bit influenced me as a person more than I realized. And so when the pandemic hit, I, like everyone else, really wanted to come out of it a better version of myself, or, you know, a slightly more evolved version of myself. And I learned to watercolor very poorly, and I learned to bake bread, and I did all the stuff everybody else was doing. And then I was like, oh, we're still indoors. Okay, I need to figure out what I would like to do. And so I'm an actor by trade, and I thought maybe I'll go get my master's degree in theater, because my undergrad is a Bachelor of Fine Arts in dance. And so I always had a bit of imposter syndrome as an actor, feeling like because I didn't have that conservatory training, even though I had read every book and gone to every class and really made sure I knew as much about my craft as I could, I still had that little bit of like, well, you weren't a theater major, so maybe it's not that legit. And so I thought about going back to school, and I applied to one school, and they said, oh, sorry, we're still accepting applicants from before the pandemic, or from like the beginning of the pandemic. And so I thought, okay, I guess that's not what I'm going to do. What else do I want to do? And then I decided to take a robotics course. They lost me very early on. It was really interesting though. And I thought, okay, what's next? What else do I want to take a class in? And I found an Egyptology course through Harvard. It was like the certificate program. And I thought, oh, it'd be cool to have a certificate from Harvard on my resume that I'm never going to show anybody. So I started the course and I just fell in love with it. My professor he's like a Pixar character. He's so full of life and energy. And his name is Professor Peter Dermanwalian. Oh God, I hope I said that right. It's been a minute. But he was just so passionate about the subject that I couldn't help but absorb some of that passion. And it just totally sparked something inside me that made me go, okay, I want to keep doing this. I want to learn more about this. I, you know, got 100% on every test that I did. And I thought, okay, I'm good at this. I enjoy this. I need to see this through a little bit more. So I once again applied to one grad school. It's the only fully online Egyptology program. And since we were all stuck inside, I didn't know when I would actually be able to go onto a campus. And so I applied, and I somehow got into the University of Manchester's MA Egyptology program. Yay. And here I am almost 2 years later writing my dissertation. It's wild. It's been so incredible. And I got to visit Manchester a few months ago and meet some of my professors in person, which was a really great experience. There's not, surprisingly, a big community of Egyptologists in Los Angeles. So it was really nice to find that little community up there. And they have a beautiful museum up there with some really incredible pieces. And It was really cool. It's been so much fun and just the most random thing I think I could have done. But it was nice. I really wanted to do something that I wouldn't normally take time out of my life or career. Or, you know, I would find it hard to justify going back to school for Egyptology when I'm an actor and everybody makes you feel like acting has to be your entire world. And the more I do it, the more I realize that experience is the best teacher. And being interested in other things makes you a more interesting person and therefore a more interesting actor. And like acting is one of those careers that is never going to love you the way you love it. And so it's like, I need to make sure that I'm feeling fulfilled in my day-to-day life and not just worried about the big landmark moments.
Right.
Which is totally what you do when you're like, you know, 20 to 25. Everyone's like, oh, I got to get to the next big thing. Got to get to the next big thing. And then you kind of realize your in-between moments are lacking, or you have this weird roller coaster of emotions and you get all these like post-show blues after getting to do something big and exciting. And so this is one of my ways to make all the in-between moments really fun too.
I mean, it's such it's the most interesting, or at least one of the most interesting, I feel like, career choices you can have. I think it's so fascinating. And as soon as we were introduced, I'm like, oh my gosh, Egyptology, we have to talk about it. And then of course I asked the most embarrassing question that I'm sure everyone's hearts will stop when they're actually really into Egyptology, which was, how do you feel about the Mummy movie? You know, the one from 1999.
Oh, one of my favorite movies of all time, which yeah. I probably should not admit. I wrote about that film in my letter to the school in part of my application letter. And then the very first lecture, my professor, who's now my academic advisor for my dissertation, he was like, that piece of shit movie. Oh, I hate that movie. It's so incorrect. And I was like, oh my God, how did I get into this school? I can't, like, I wrote a whole paragraph about how much fun that movie was. What a pivotal moment of my life. How, like, I wanted to be the person in every group who could decipher whatever code was on the wall, or, you know, who knew all these different languages. And I just wanted to be, you know, Evie from that movie, because she was so cool and she could hold her own, but she was very feminine and very, oh, it was devastating.
Oh my gosh.
I stand by that film.
You know
I
what? Do. It's fun. It's exciting. It is very clever. It might not be accurate, but it's clever. You know,
but that's the thing. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts about Egyptology is like, it's all speculation. I mean, okay, they were pretty wrong about a lot of stuff, but you know, it's still, you know, maybe.
You're not watching the movie to watch a documentary about Egypt. You're watching it to have fun.
Yes, it is a suspension of disbelief. Absolutely.
Yes. And I definitely agree. I mean, I think Evie O'Connell inspired me to get into that life of adventure with the Explorers Club too. You know, I mean, there's that value there, you know, there's something there, even if it's not at all accurate. But I guess we digress a little bit. So I wanted to ask you, I guess, first, what I think was the thing that surprised you the most about Egyptology? Like, what did you not expect when you started with all of your courses? Like, was there anything that was surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that surprised me. I mean, the fact that, you know, as an American, this country's only a couple hundred years old. And so the history that we learn is pretty small compared to everyone else. And like, there is history. I just feel like growing up in the 90s, we didn't necessarily learn that much before a certain time. And to think about learning about these people from thousands of years ago is just, it's hard to wrap your head around. And the fact that there are so many similarities between people thousands of years ago and people now. And it's wild and it's exciting and it's kind of terrifying. And it's bizarre to see how different we are and how similar we really are. Like it was really cool to learn about how they, especially during the pandemic, they were like, yeah, and they baked bread and they made beer. And I was like, me too. And so that was it. Yeah, it was wild. And they, I mean, women could have abortions, women could own property, which was not always the case for women in our history, very, you know, recent history. And it's wild just to see as much as you can see of what humans were like. And right. It makes me feel like an interesting connection to those people, because you are having, there, it really is a common thread through all of humanity. And when you can discover that and find that, it makes the world such a smaller place. Mm-hmm. And then there are really incredible people now who are trying to show the world that the world wasn't, you know, as small and isolated as everybody thinks it was. Right. You know, like people are taking out, you know, like the Contiki mission, just trying to prove that, like, no, people could have visited each other. There could have been people here from this other place. And just showing that even when everybody assumes that it was so isolated, mm-hmm. that there still was that connection, that we've always been drawn to, you know, finding other people or meeting other people or experiencing things.
So there's a lot of parallels between the modern world and the ancient world, and they're not as different from us as we would think they would be, basically. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite theories is that they actually had so much more knowledge than we have now. It just, it's all been lost. And it's like, oh man, we got dumber. Oh no.
You know, but someone actually brought that up too, that there were old maps that have Antarctica on it that were from before we actually, quote unquote, found Antarctica. So they knew it was there. Like, you know, there's pieces of history that prove that what we think might not be true.
Yeah, like the world's always been here, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, not always, but the world's always been here. So to think that just in the last, you know, hundreds or thousand years, that's all about, like, I don't think people give enough credit to the ancient civilizations. I mean, right. Not nearly enough.
We think of them as being uneducated or not technologically advanced when they probably had a lot of different ways to do things, and they were no less valid than what we're doing today.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you had answered this question at the Explorers Club that I thought was fascinating, where you were saying that you could read hieroglyphs, and you mentioned something about them even having like conjugation or tenses. And I want to know more about this, because that blew my mind when you said that.
Well, I'm still learning about it, but it's really incredible just how much of the language you can discover and uncover through the hieroglyphs. When I was first learning about it, I thought, well, it's either going to be, you know, bird means this, or, you know, water means water. But then the certain combinations of things, certain conjugations, you can, you know, they had different formulas for like different sexes. And, you know, and it was just, you can tell what period it's from by what style of hat a pharaoh is wearing. And it is way more complex and way deeper than I ever assumed it was going to be. I'm restarting my textbook because I'm like, I feel like I still have so much I can learn about this. And it's, you know, really exciting to have my little trinkets and be able to be like, oh, okay, I know that says like Cleopatra, or I know that says like a gift from the gods to this king or something like that. And it's wild. And there's, you know, translation and transliteration, and it's bizarre. It's like trying to do math algebra through calculus. You're like, okay, let me figure out the calculus, then translates to algebra, then translates to your ABCs. And you're like, my head hurts. But it's, I mean, when you sort of get it, it's the most, you know, you feel so successful.
I mean, it's fascinating because you, when you think of something that's presented like a picture, like a hieroglyph, you don't think of it as having like tenses or conjugation. You just think that it's a picture, like you said. And it's wild that there's so much more complexity to it.
Yeah. Depending on the combination, it can mean totally different things. Sometimes water means water. And you're like, okay, well, let's, I mean, it's just kind of, it's starting to become for me, like learning any other language where it's like, okay, it's a lot about the context. So if somebody asked me to write a sentence, it'd be a lot harder than if I were to look at something and go, oh, okay, now I understand because of the context of this symbol and this, that it's saying something like this. And it's, I have a lot to learn, but God, it's fascinating. I feel really cool.
I know you are. You're so cool. That is just, I mean, how many friends do you have that can actually like read hieroglyphics? I mean, that's really cool. And I have to ask, you brought up your dissertation. So please tell us about your dissertation.
So, I mean, it's kind of an ever evolving thing until it's done, but it's right now I wanted to bridge the gap between my two degrees. So I'm doing kind of a reanalysis of dance and dancers in ancient Egypt, which there's not a lot of information on, which is both very helpful because then I can be like, nobody can disprove this. Show me in a book somewhere. And they're like, there isn't a book. And I'm like, exactly. but it's also very difficult because of that. But it's really interesting. I like to think at least that, you know, dancers were closer to the status of like a priest or some liaison between the deities and the civilians rather than just some sort of like, you know, circus performer. Because a lot of people think based off of the visual images that dance was something that we would consider closer to gymnastics or contortionism now. And as a dancer, I'm like, no, people can do that. I can do that. You don't have to be a contortionist to do that. You know, and there's a lot of visuals that really look like some sort of a presentation to the gods. And it is really interesting. It's a lot of New Kingdom stuff, which is like 18th, 19th, 20th dynasties, which is incredible. I mean, it's like you're talking about like, you know, 1500 BCE. Or not 1500, you're talking about like 15th century BCE and it's mind blowing. It's absolutely mind blowing. And there's all of these different kinds of banquet rituals, funerary rituals, temple rituals that all have wonderful, you know, depictions of dancers. And I feel like every human being has a neurological drive to dance. You look at any cute YouTube video of a baby and somebody turns music on and they start wiggling in their chair. They don't even know how to walk yet, but they know that when it comes on, that's time to boogie. And it's, there has to be some sort of a connection that way that is on a deeper spiritual level that rather than just, you know, some sort of presentation or not that it didn't have a purpose, but that it was like a biological need almost.
Right.
Something that not everybody can do.
Right.
I mean, there are styles of dance that are really not built for certain body types. I mean, if you look at any Martha Graham, you know, performances, you're like, oh my God, my hips hurt for you. It's wild. So some people that don't have a certain rotation in their hips are going to have a much harder time. So it takes a certain kind of person and it takes a hell of a lot of discipline and it's been really fun. So it took me a while to decide on this topic because I really wanted to feel like an Egyptologist and not a dancer learning about Egyptology. And now I've kind of gained the confidence to combine my passions and talk about both as one.
That's, you know, amazing.
I'm an expert in dance. I've done it my entire life. I've done all the history classes and I've performed all over the world and I have a degree. I'm like, I should use it.
I mean, and also too, like you said, the fact that there's not much information on it, I think is actually a huge strength because your research is going to be prime at the top But it's true when, because there's a hole there. You know, I mean, the part of the job of scientists, even so to speak, is to fill those holes, you know, and figure out the why. And even if it's just the first steps to have other people start asking more questions, then, you know, you're going to start that conversation. So that's really exciting.
And it would be nice if it could, I don't know, change somebody's mind on dance as a career.
Yeah.
Like nowadays it would be, we'll see. I at the Explorers Club events, I met a really fascinating woman who is the leading expert on leeches in Madagascar. And that's because she's the only one. She's the expert on leeches in Madagascar. There are like 6 leech experts around the world, and she is the leading one.
But that's,
and that's how I feel about this. I'm like, maybe I could be the leading expert on dance in ancient Egypt because nobody else has tried.
I mean, I think that's a great idea though, because why would you keep researching the same things everyone else is looking into? Why wouldn't you create something new and start that conversation? I think that's really cool. And it is like that, because everybody winds up knowing each other in this world too. Like there is no stranger. When we were at the Explorers Club, there was a girl that was like, talked about the Robben Island penguins. And I was like, I was working with penguins on Robben Island. And she's like, me too. And I'm like, do you know Richard Shirley? She's like, I do. Like the world is so small with like explorers and scientists that everybody winds up knowing each other if you have a specialty.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is really hard to try to come up with an original idea with something that there's so little information on. I mean, ancient Egypt, just in general, spanning thousands of years, there were Egyptologists in ancient Egypt. The ancient Egyptians were studying ancient Egypt. It's just the most incredible thing. And there's so much that we don't know, and so much of it is speculation. And many people say that if we had to retranslate the Rosetta Stone and start over with our interpretation and translation of hieroglyphs, that we do it completely different, but we can't, because this is what everybody knows right now.
Right. Which,
if we try to change it now, there's 2 different schools of thought and 2 different ways to do it. And it's, you know, and it's bizarre to feel like there's something that's stuck in such a, in a field that there's so much speculation about.
Right. No. It's like part creative, part science. Like there's that artistic side too, that sometimes you need to take a step back and look at it a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is really neat to be able to pipe up in a lecture and say, well, could this have been the case? And your teacher goes, sure, absolutely. Like there are no dumb questions, no dumb suggestions. Like anything could have been possible, because over those thousands of years, we have a good amount of knowledge, but oh man, there's so much we don't know.
That's so wild.
It's pretty fun.
It is fun to look at things that you consider a hard science too, and realize that there's so much room for error, and there's so many different ways you can look at it. And maybe it's not as finite as you think it could be. And I think that's what furthers the world. We're always evolving and changing and learning new things. And it's interesting to know that like, we're just breaking through on the minor concepts of Egyptology. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah. I'm really hoping I can get the chance to help people with some field work in the future after I turn in my dissertation, because that's going to be all I do for the next 4 months. It feels so funny to say I'm really excited to be a part of the future of something so old.
Yeah.
Like see what else we can find, and see what new discoveries there are, and see what new things there are about it, which seems so impossible until you discover something new.
It's amazing. But I mean, that's science, you know. You just keep trying to disprove until you're able to prove. And I'm excited to see where you'll go with this, and the fact that you might be, you know, the person starting the conversation on dance in ancient Egypt.
it'd be pretty cool. I, you know, it's nerve-wracking thinking about like publishing my dissertation. Then at the same time, I'm like, Why not?
Well, you have to. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, like, you have to do that. It's your dissertation. You got to do it. I'm excited to read it. You'll have to send it to me.
Okay.
You're like, oh. Well, I guess before we go, is there anything else you'd like to say about your journey or Egyptology in general?
Oh, man. I feel like I could go on and on about how thrilling it all is and what a nerd I am about all of it. But I just really enjoy sharing my passion with somebody. So thank you for having me and for letting me talk on and on and on about it.
No, of course. I love hearing it. And it's so exciting to be a part of the Explorers Club and get to meet other curious, like-minded people with interests that are very similar. And, you know, there's not many people like us out there. So it's so fun to get to meet a kindred spirit and to share the experiences that we have shared at the Explorers Club headquarters and beyond.
It's nice to have this now, mm-hmm. too, rather than like at the end of our careers or something, because now who knows where we're going to go with our careers and with, you know, each other. Well, I can't imagine all the incredible places I'm going to travel with people from the Explorers Club. Any of those people could tell me to drop everything and fly to Portugal or anywhere, some random place in the world. And I'd be like, okay, I'll do it. I don't care what it is. I'm there with you guys. I am there.
I know. And Steve, like the first weekend I was meeting everyone, Steve's like, oh, so-and-so is doing this. And so do you need a young person? Because we have young people here for your hire. You know, he's like trying to sell us out to like expeditions. Go, get out there. And I love it. I love it. It's a very can-do attitude, which I think we both have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be on a lot of adventures together. But thank you so much for speaking to me today, Dakota, about Egyptology.
Thank you. And
of course. And I'm sure I will see you soon at one of our Explorers Club events or my birthday. A random heads up. We're doing a murder mystery, but like medieval style murder mystery for my birthday. And Dakota's going to be there.
I'm so excited. That sounds incredible.
I have no idea what to expect. It's either going to be great or it's just going to bomb, but we're going to have fun either way. So.
No, it'll be great. It'll be great. Yeah. There's no way it couldn't be great.
Yay. Well, thank you again, Dakota. And everybody, thank you for tuning in. And until next time, stay weird.